This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, if it's actually working, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio, dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM, but you can always stay up to date if you're away from the radio with the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. You can listen anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Good day, George.
Good day to you, sir.
We'll talk about George's Jets a little bit later. They've got a new quarterback. We've got NFL. I don't know what we're calling this. It's like legal tampering. It's like somewhere in between. A, legal tampering is one of my favorite oxymorons to begin with. It's how is tampering legal? Like it's something else. Like tampering itself is illegal. So we just need to come up with it. Like the talking period, I don't know. We'll like make it like the quiet period, the dead period, make it something college-esque. We'll discuss that a little bit later on in the program. But my company is each and every Monday head coach, team director of Team Thad, of course, the station's basketball expert. Follow him on socials at Dream Big Herd. Coach Herd, good day, sir.
Yes, sir. Great day, great weekend of sports.
Great weekend of sports. It's Monday, so we will overreact. Tigers defeat South Florida Friday night. Great scene at FedEx Forum as the Tigers celebrated their first outright conference title since 2013. Congratulations to all. We'll discuss that. Grizzlies also got two wins over the weekend. Maybe wasn't the most comfortable, but again, we're at the point in the calendar where really all that matters is what happens in the standings. And the Grizzlies are now only a game out of second place. LeBron's probably going to miss some time for the Lakers, so maybe an opportunity for the Grizzlies to move up into the standings. We'll discuss Tigers and Grizzlies here to start the show. Jason Munn's going to join us like he does each and every Monday. We'll talk Tiger basketball with him. We'll get into the list. As mentioned, big day in NFL, whatever we're calling it, free agent frenzy, legal tampering, everybody lying and then getting new deals, and we'll discuss all of that. Also want to get Coach's thoughts on Steph Curry becoming the assistant GM of Davidson. We've had some more coaching moves in the world of college basketball. Get into that. Grizzlies taking on the Suns tonight, 6:30 for pregame. You can hear tip-off with Eric at 7 p.m. Right now, the Grizzlies about a four-point favorite. So we'll get you ready for the Grizzlies. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But Herd, it is Monday, and I figured let's overreact to the weekend, and let's overreact to the local teams. My first overreaction is, we'll start with the Tigers. No matter what happens the rest of the year, this was the most important season of Penny Hardaway's tenure. When you look at where we were in September, the vibe, and you and I discussed how much of it was real, how much of it was stuff that just gets out here, that stuff that happens at every other program. But to me, the most important thing was, after a bad year like last year, and if you wanted to make the case that there was chaos, it was clearly a miserable season for all involved. I thought the most important thing was, no matter what, let's get this thing back on the rails. And I don't care. I don't care if it's quote unquote lowering the standard. Get back to the tournament, show some proof of concept, take a deep breath, and let's just all kind of settle down a little bit. And that's exactly what happened. And Penny made the statement, my what a difference a year makes. I would make the argument, my what a difference 6 months makes. Because if you just look at how we were feeling in September, wasn't great. But 26-5, definitely I think the most weeks ranked inside the top 25. The most steady season that we've seen. First ever conference regular season title. Like, all of that, to me, it's just like everything is checkmark, checkmark, checkmark. Yes, if they don't win a game in the tournament, maybe they don't advance. You'll feel a certain way. But to me, the most important thing was showing we can do it this way. All you can have all the chaos and whatnot, but just get it back on the rails. And to me, that's what they did this year. And everybody, players included, staff, Penny, everyone deserves commendation. Like, so far to me, great season.
No, I don't think it could not be a great season, what they have done, Jeff, like you just said. Even if they lose some games at this point, because they have done everything. They have made the sweep. And like you say, what a 6 months make, because, man, they won outright. And it's funny because, Jeff, and to the media defense, even when I no matter whose side I take on this, but last year was so wild of a swing up until just a few games ago. People were still saying every now and then we play, look bad. I lost. Oh, here we go. I mean, that's how, and I don't think everybody was hating. It was just one of those things where people probably couldn't believe, because they've been waiting for this so long, that it's actually the real deal now. You know what I mean? And so I guess people didn't want to get their hopes up. I guess, you know, because I don't think everybody always hate. You know, even in life, when I'm going through something, anybody, you know, everybody's not hating on, you know.
I definitely think you're spot on the, I think more than anything, it was people not wanting to get their hopes up.
Yeah.
Because what had happened largely in the Penny Hardaway era was you get your hopes up, and then something would happen and you got burned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think we even saw this like during the non-conference schedule, which was undoubtedly a massive success. I think in the back of everyone's mind, people were still going, well, they did pretty well in the non-con last year. Mm-hmm. And what did that matter? Well, the key difference was, as the season played on, the wins that you got last year didn't really hold up because a lot of those teams fell apart. Whereas this year, the wins that you got, I mean, is UConn the most dominant team in the country? No, but it's still a tournament team. And then on top of that, Michigan State won the Big Ten outright. Clemson finishes, undoubtedly going to be a tournament team, finishes second in the ACC. That's a big road win. Missouri's going to be a no-doubt tournament team. Ole Miss is going to be a tournament team. And, like, all the wins held up more. And then, to me, the key thing was the conference is what it is. We all know it. We know what the score is. Like, you're not going to have any wins that you really feel great about. But at the same time, they were steady throughout conference play. Yes, you didn't go perfect in conference play. But no one went perfect in conference play. Duke included, Auburn included. Like, even when you go through all the mid-majors, everyone lost a game in conference play, and their two losses were both on the road in tough environments. And so, to me, it's like, hats off. This was exactly what they needed, and I know that I've said it before, but I will repeat myself. I thought it was also really important for Penny to see it work conventionally. Roster makes more sense. You're not going out. You're not just star chasing. You don't have 8 of the same type redundant players. You had a clear pecking order. You have really good guard play. And I know this is something you've pointed out, and I totally agree with you. Almost everybody that's on this Tigers team has largely played somewhere else and has played better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to be commended, because that's the staff. And I know at times maybe Penny can think that he's not getting his due for being a coach, but like, I will acknowledge, like, that's something I pay attention to. Even like Nick Jourdain, a guy that you did have last year, I think it's undeniable he's playing better this year than he did last year. Everyone that he's had has gotten better.
No, that's for sure. So the season has been great so far. And like you say, it was some things that happened in the offseason. Like, I can't just fully say, like I tell you all the time, Jeff, the media, you know, the timing of the coaches was something and all of that, and it was to be looked at. It was to be somewhat questioned. But over, you know what I'm saying, who had a good offseason? One of my best friends, B.O.S.E.P., and he's not feeling it right now. I was just saying that it doesn't always, and you know this with sports. Now, I don't agree with, like, if somebody do a heinous crime or something, but anything under, like, a crazy crime, when you're winning, people do overlook things. When you win,
100%.
In sports, in high-level sports, like, so it's one of them things that's like, I think if we even have a little crazy offseason this year, people won't even get as crazy by it because of the respect, especially if he win, like, 2-3 games in the tournament. But even without that, I just think that I think he have a true believer. Now, I think you might have a few fans like, well, I still need to see a little more. But for the majority, I think this is what they was waiting for. And people who are fair, they are giving, you know, Penny and the Tigers they respect.
Yeah, and I also, I never know exactly how much credit to give a new AD and whatnot, but I do think that this is true too. Ed Scott came in, he took a look under the hood, and I think he and Penny had some conversations about the way things are going and about the way that things are going to go. And this isn't even to throw Laird under the bus, because Munz and I have talked about it a lot. There was just no relationship between Laird and Penny. I think oftentimes it was like cast as, you know, it's bad. I was like, I think it's nothing. Like, I just think it's non-existent. But you have a guy in Ed Scott, and you saw clearly there was a different approach to how Penny talked about the program, whatnot. And then I think it's also important, Ed clearly did some things for Penny that Penny thought, okay, I can trust this guy. Brings in Tim Duncan, someone that Penny's very comfortable with and wanted. And I think the fact that you actually had everybody pushing in one direction and in the right direction, I think that has contributed to the stability, because I'm with you. There's so many things that oftentimes would leak out around the program that if you are just reading it, you're like, oh my gosh. But you know, in it even better than I do, I've covered basketball programs and I know stuff happens. And I mean, I think about even last week, my old boss was telling me this, our boy Matt Morrell, in pregame shoot around, he got into it with a teammate before the Tennessee game. And if you just hear pregame scrap, you go, oh my gosh, what's happened? Well, in reality, Beard said, like, I loved it. Like, it was everybody showing the intensity. They knew this was a big game tonight and they wanted to see it happen. Yeah. And also with Matt, like, Matt has no ligaments in his knee right now. The fact that he, like, guts it out, it's unreal to watch. So I'm happy that Matt finally has gotten a shine, but like, it's stuff that happens, and I think it was kind of important they cleaned it up, the leaks this year.
Yeah Well, once it got started, because but with what you just said, the key word with that is, you know, Matt played for me and Chris Beard, a good friend of mine. I think it brings you back to my point, they won the game.
Yep.
I don't know if Chris Beard would have been
feels
that
the same
hype. It, think about this, Jeff. This is how crazy most people would never be in the sports realm like you or I have been. But I'm at winning. You know, I had a few teams go out this weekend. You know who's happy? My teams who went 3-0, 2-1. You know who's not happy? The parents. My teams who went 0-3 and 1-2. Right. So it's some of my younger teams. So winning is
I feel like I'm talking to my dad. my dad coaches elite travel ball, and like, they had a tournament in the middle of last summer where same thing that you're saying, like 0-5 or whatever, 1-4. And nothing but complaints, whatnot.
Like, the world coming to the end.
And then they got to the Worldwood Bat, and he's got a good team, but there were teams that had, like, 10 high-level draft pick, like, top-end guys, and he's got one stud, but he doesn't have that many. And they win the whole thing, and all of a sudden, you know.
You're the greatest coach
correct,
now.
Of all
the
time.
Program is great.
Yeah.
At first, they even talk, you lose. We don't even like your team colors no more.
Correct.
Coach been eating
those
funny with a
so
fork.
Those so stupid. Yeah,
it's just. And I say that to say, that's how we were on Memphis. I was at the first game of the year against Memphis and Missouri. Granted, one, it was only half a crowd. Two, you know, we were down the first half. If you can hear the negative energy in that bit, I was almost praying, I hope they win this game, because I don't know if he would have been able to take it, because at the time, we didn't know in the world, and know especially Memphians, everybody in the crowd was like, and when I say crowd, I went to get food. I went to the restroom. I had 2-3 people I was cool with that was big time people in town and sweets. I was sweet picking, and I was in my seat. So it ain't like I was just in one spot.
Right. You were doing a tour.
Yeah, I was actually, I had some things going on that day. Yeah. You know, Nike was in town, had a sweet couple other people, right? So I got invited to somebody else's suite. But
what
anyway.
We call that making things happen?
So I say that to say, it's some pretty cool suites too. But I say that to say.
Would like to know.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody was like, Missouri might not win the game in the SEC. This is awful. I'm talking about no matter where you win.
John got old takes exposed. I'm not picking on John, because the thing is, the last thing we saw from Missouri was they did not win a game
they
in the SEC.
To be, yeah.
Yeah. So, now, it turned out Missouri was pretty good, but we didn't know that.
So Missouri looked it bad the first game, but they do got Mark Mitchell from Duke and some other guys that I knew they would be better. I'm not saying I knew they would be this good. I don't know if the average fan keeps up with that, but Mark Mitchell was a top 10 McDonald's All-American, and they do got some other guys, right? And so, but everybody was right, and so they won that game and move on. And both of those teams are exceptionally well coached. Both of those teams, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Missouri or Memphis go to the Sweet 16 this year. I'm not saying it's a favorite to do, but I'm just saying I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, they both like what top 16 in the country, right?
Yeah, I mean, but okay. You could also tell me with this tournament, like, I feel like if you're kind of like in the top 40, I mean, all we're talking about is having 2 good days to get to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, like, there's a lot of teams, I feel like, that if you wind up being, like, it would not shock me to see, you know, multiple double-digit seeds wind up in the second weekend, just because I feel like maybe we don't have the, I don't know if Auburn or Duke, maybe we'll find out that they're the super team like UConn has been, but they're only going to be in one bracket.
For sure.
And so the rest of it, it feels like, man, we've seen so many games this year where you're like, how'd they lose? Or it's just like, to me, it's like there's so many teams that are kind of all similarly built. And then with Memphis, a huge part of it is, man, how many games are they going to go into without the two best guards?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And I can't, because March Madness is almost here, right?
We're 6 days away from Selection Sunday.
Selection Sunday. So my thing with that is, you know, I know we got the SEC and you got Duke or Houston, but I don't think, even though people look down them, I don't think like a seasoned team like a UConn, I don't get surprised if they go to the Sweet 16, because I feel like experience and experienced coaches. Also, Tim, if you agree with me on this, Jeff, unlike football, I'm not putting the Big Ten as the second best conference around. I think the Big 12 might still be a little better, and the Big East is competing. I think they're a little top heavy, but you know, you know how football was clearly Big Ten and SEC. I thought that early on, you know. But as of right now, I don't think the Big Ten is just that far off better than the Big 12.
All right, let's go through team by team, because I think you might be. I think the Big 12 might have some depth.
Yeah.
Houston or Michigan State, I give the nod to Houston.
Houston.
Right? Are we in agreement there?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, the number two team would be Texas Tech versus Maryland.
I mean, Maryland been good. It's like a lot of people don't even keep up with Maryland like they should or whatever. But what is Maryland ranked?
Maryland right now is 11 and Texas Tech's 9. So to me, like, that's kind of a wash.
Maybe, yeah. Texas Tech been playing good lately, though. That's a wash.
BYU and Arizona finished tied for third, and BYU got the tiebreaker. And then you have Michigan and Wisconsin.
Wisconsin just lost to
Wisconsin's limping. Yeah, they're limping in.
Even though they big time, they just are. So I would take Arizona and BYU.
All right, then we've got UCLA, Purdue, Illinois.
That's
versus crazy. Iowa State, Kansas, and Baylor.
Ooh, it's close.
All right, then we get Indiana, Ohio State, Rutgers against West Virginia, TCU, Kansas State.
That's kind of wise, too. I like the Big 12 a little better, but them all are kind of.
And then the bottom would be Utah, Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, UCF, Arizona State, Colorado against Northwestern, USC, Iowa, Nebraska, Penn State, Washington.
It's about a wash. I still like the Big 12 a little bit. I would say if it was a basketball game, they'll win by 4 points. And we just,
I think I agree with you. All right, let's see what the metrics say.
And I mean, in the Big East, not as big, but they top heavy is pretty good too, though, with like St. John's and Marquette and Creighton. You know, UConn, go make a run.
All right, so right now, the SEC, far and away, the best when you look at net ratings. The Big Ten and the Big East, I'm sorry, the Big Ten and the Big 12, they're separated by less than one percentage point. So that's kind of your point. Know,
yeah, that was my, yeah. Yeah.
And then the Big East right behind them, but there's a gap between, like the gap between the Big 12 and the Big East is the same as the gap between the SEC and the Big Ten.
Gotcha. And the Big East don't got as many teams.
Correct.
But I didn't even look at the metric. It just came in my head. But when some
you're a ball knower. You instinctively know ball.
Yeah, but when some people be talking, I think me, even you done did this before, me and you, at one point we felt like the Big Ten was just a right out second. And the more I've been watching ball this year, and I'm like, the Big East, the middle to the bottom have kind of not been doing too well this year.
Well, I think, though, this kind of goes to the same point, though, what I was telling you about when we'll see who ends up getting through the first weekend. Like, it feels to me like it's going to be a lot of teams with matchups. It's like, do you run up against, are you the, like, if Michigan State's a two, and Michigan State shot the ball well, pretty well the last few weeks, but Michigan State's not been a great shooting team. If you wind up getting in that 215 game against one of those 15 seeds that just is going to fire up 43s and they hit 20 of them, well, all of a sudden, I don't really love Michigan State.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How far behind are they the ACC from the Big East?
Then, so basically the gap between the Big 12 and the Big East, it's still that gap between the Big East and the ACC. And then you have a smaller gap, basically a percentage point between the ACC and the Mountain West. Another big drop between the Mountain West and the West Coast Conference. Shout out to my alma mater. My alma mater's on like an absolute tear through the WCC tournament, but they play St. Mary's tonight and they're going to get beat by 30.
St. Mary's been pretty good.
It's also hurt me because I've been betting against my team and then they keep winning and then you don't know how to feel afterwards. So that's that was a tough weekend.
I think you missed them. You haven't said the AAC. Did you?
Oh, no. I haven't missed them. They're 10th.
So 10th. How many?
So then it goes West Coast Conference is at 7.
Okay.
A10's at 8. CUSA's at 9.
Who?
Conference USA. Yeah. Then the AAC.
I thought the Missouri Valley. The best teams from the Conference USA go to the AAC.
Well, on paper. But I mean, you got to remember. So in CUSA, you've got Liberty, which has been a pretty decent program. MTSU's been pretty decent. Jacksonville State's been decent. Like, that's kind of the biggest problem right now. And like, then as Penny's pointed out last week, a big problem that the American has is, number one, it's hard for schools not Memphis to get games, non-con games. And then a lot of people start scheduling to get wins to sit there and go keep the job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of it. We'll talk more Tigers with Munz when he joins us here in about 15 minutes. But I wanted to pick your brain also on this because kind of my big take was Memphis sports fans got exactly what they needed to see this weekend. But I think in particular, Ja Morant had the weekend that Grizzlies fans needed. Twofold. Number one, made shots. Back-to-back games, 30 or more, and they needed him. They needed that fourth quarter against Dallas, and I'm not saying that these are all comfortable wins, but this is what I loved, and this is what he said after the Dallas game to Chris Arrington, because this has been my big point about the attitude. I'm just trying to take a pretty much different approach. As a competitor, if you feel like something ain't going your way, you get frustrated. Obviously, I've been frustrated this season by receiving texts, so I'm just trying to go about it a different way. I don't feel like the officials are on my side, but I'm trying to stick with it. Don't let them continue to take me out of my game, which is bad for my teammates. So I've been working on that. I'm still trying to work on it, but hopefully at some point it turns over. That's 100% my whole criticism. Do I think that he's not getting a whistle? I do. But the biggest problem I have is that you are the leader. You're the team. And everything feeds off you. And he's been putting his teammates in bad spots. And on Friday, I know he was frustrated again. But there's like a moment where you can see he kind of looks over at Taylor and it's like, you go handle this. And then Taylor gets on the official. Like, that's, to me, that's just a better way to go about it, because you're not, when you start doing some of the things that he does, everything just becomes about asking the teammates about Ja. And that's just not how it needs to be. And to me, that in and of itself is such an adjustment. And that is exactly, I think, what everybody needed.
No, like you say, I think that was good because, like you say, the Grizzlies has the talent. Everybody know who Ja Morant is. So now it's, like you say, the approach to the game, other stuff that you can't control. Well, you can't control, but outside of basketball, they kind of leave it alone. What I'm most impressed by, man, I think Ja can do what he want when he want when he feels it, right? The team got wins. I feel like I'm on a world spin week to week because it's like, I guess the West is so tight. Just last week, it was people was like the sky falling out when they lost. They're the fourth seed. Houston on their butt. They finna be fifth. Now I wake up this morning, I'm looking up some people telling me Memphis got a chance of one game from second place. I'm like, this West got to be tight as it come.
It's one of those reminders that the stuff that happened early in the season, that counts too. And the Grizzlies did build a lead. Now, it's undeniable that they've not played great basketball the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not even saying, oh, everything's fixed. But because they had built a lead and built a gap, you've now put yourself in a position where, yes, you have a bad stretch. But everybody's going to have a bad stretch. And then on top of that, yeah, you were going through some injuries, but guess what? Bron's going to miss a couple of weeks. You know, the Denver's not deep. And all of a sudden, you're just right back into the thick of it. But I think far too often, we fall into the trap of, okay, there's only 6 weeks before the playoffs start. Like, everything's like, and then when you see your team's not playing well, you kind of forget, well, all 82 games count. Mm. And that's why math matters. And this is why when a lot of people are like, man, look at it. Look at the teams behind them. They could fall out of the play. And it's like, y'all, 4 games with 20 to play, that's a significant margin.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of hard to blow. Not impossible, but you start to see, all right, they had a 2-0 weekend, and all of a sudden, now there's 4 games in between them and sixth. So it's kind of where everyone kind of forgets in the standings. The math has a tendency to tell the story of, all right, this is where they're headed, and now it's kind of a reminder of, all right, they don't have to be amazing to just get right back in the thick of it. They were not amazing this weekend, but they're right back there. And to me, the biggest deal is Ja even missed shots on Friday night. And then he has a fourth quarter where he goes nuts, and just kind of a reminder, hey, stack that kind of performance. And then last night, another good second half, hit some big shots. It's just kind of keep going. And to me, like, that's why I thought it was important for Ja. Even when it wasn't going well, he kept going. Better demeanor, and lo and behold, they get into the fourth quarter in both games. They figure out ways to win.
And that's exactly what him and that team did. That's what they needed. So to the Grizzlies' defense, you know, haven't started games out fast, but at the end of the day, they did what they needed, right? And so they right back on the thick of things, like you said, Jeff. People do forget. A lot of people tune in after All-Star weekend, right?
Oh, yeah.
They go finally start playing harder. Let's just – but no, the games at the beginning matter, and the Grizzlies, you know, guess what? We go do that every year. Some of y'all can afford to wait. We finna take our wins at the beginning of the year and do what we gotta do.
Well, then on top of that, now it's like, all right, Taylor says after the game, Jaren's maybe coming back a little bit quicker. Again, he's not gonna play tonight, but
and that's in Phoenix, right?
No, they're back here.
They're back here.
Yeah.
I feel like they were just here 2 weeks ago.
They were. You're not wrong.
Okay.
Phoenix, and then I think Utah on Wednesday.
Okay.
So, like, all of a sudden, it's like you looked at these games and you weren't feeling great. It's like, all right, they got a pretty good chance of going 3-1 in a 4-game stretch. Like, you're just not going to give up that much ground. All right, I want to talk to you real quick before we go. My last overreaction for the weekend, my boy Kevin Keats is a hero. And when everyone does the whole, goes to the Final Four last year, gets fired this year. Well, the biggest thing, though, was because he won the ACC title, automatic, no rules, two-year extension, and the buyout went up. So this year didn't even matter. He's getting paid more.
For sure. I just think, first of all, Kevin Keek's a good guy.
Yes, okay? Everything says that.
This is ultimately not about good guys either when you're talking about.
Well, the other thing is Kevin Keek would still be a good guy, but if Virginia would have fouled up three in the ACC title game, they wouldn't have won the game. Like, the game got to overtime. They won in overtime. He would have been fired then. Instead, goes on a miracle run, gives us a fun team to watch last year, and he gets extra money.
Yeah, I think they got to bite the bullet with that, though, Jeff. He did go to the Final Four, and I think you got to at least wait a couple years to three, or you look like a bad organization.
I just feel like everything now is just so topsy-turvy. It's like, make sure you got a good agent, and make sure they write in the contract that you get paid. Like, in the end, that's what the money's for.
Yeah.
Because everyone's just going to emotionally react one way or the other. Now, what was a little surprising, though, is we've seen teams be afraid of spending money to pay someone not to coach.
Especially NC State for basketball.
Yeah. And bit the bullet.
You know what I'm saying? It's like you usually do that when somebody – it's like when they – usually people do stuff like when they really want somebody gone.
Yeah, the other thing is Keats and – Keats also had a good team in the COVID year. I think Chris Mack's the guy that probably got the most screwed by COVID because I think Louisville was like number one in the nation. Mm-hmm. COVID happens. Like they were like looking like they could be like a real threat. COVID happens. They come back, have a bad year. He's gone. Keats kind of fell into the same thing. I think it was in 7 years. He had three tournaments. That's also the other thing. It's like now there's going to be so much turnover. Get your money and then you'll pop up somewhere else again. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think we're going to see coaches. Coaches will.
Speaking of Virginia, they need to be calling him.
I don't know what they're going to do.
They haven't hired anybody. It's like Miami hired somebody in 1 month already.
They hired.
Luke is from Duke staff.
And then Florida State hired.
Florida State made their hire?
Yeah, they hired a Kings assistant.
A who?
Kings, a Sacramento Kings assistant.
Who?
I
don't know if I like that for college basketball.
It struck me as a we don't have a lot of money hire.
Cause I ain't gonna lie, first thing I would have did even if he turned it out, if I'm Florida State, I'm calling Rick Pitino.
I don't think they could afford it.
They probably can't. I start there, but it's some more. Then I'm calling St. Mary's coach. I mean, I'm gonna get around to it.
Luke. Honestly, I don't know if this is Luke's.
Let me see.
It's.
Yeah, I thought the same thing when I just pulled it up. I was like, I cannot pronounce this last name. Is it Locks?
He look a little familiar. Have he been in college basketball?
Let's find out.
It must be some relationship with that.
I want to say he is an alum.
Oh, he's an alum. Alums give you discounts?
Yes, alums give you discounts. Yes, he's from Clearwater, played at FSU. Played in Europe, little G League, maybe then was the D League. He was a Warriors assistant for 5 years, and he's been with, I guess he was with Mike Brown for three.
Mm. Yeah, but, yeah, see, stuff like that, me being into college ball, into sports, it's like I still feel like somebody within the, even when people come with a lot of pros in college, it's guys out here grinding that know how this college stuff go. You know what I mean? And like the Ja Lucas, I mean, he is deep into college. I know Miami taking a swing, but he's deep in the community. You know, I wish that coach nothing but success, and I'm sure he would do a great job, but he's on an NBA mindset right now. He ain't recruited no kids. He always in Northern California most of the year.
No, I mean, and that's kind of the other thing. It's like, I don't know, are you hiring now? All right, give me a guy that will be like a scheme coach guy, and then we get the GM to get the players. But, I mean, my understanding with Florida State is, like, there were a lot of names that you're like, oh, yeah, that name makes sense there. And then all of a sudden that name's not there. When I start to hear that and then I hear you hired an NBA assistant, I just think you went cheap.
Yeah, but let me say this last, Jeff. Look at what happened a few years ago with Florida, Mississippi State, and everybody. They wanted to go low. They went and got it the best mid-major coach.
Yeah.
Florida State, the best mid-major coach.
Vanderbilt did that this year.
Vanderbilt did it. Mississippi State did it. Florida did it. And it's all panned out. The best mid-major coach will leave and go play in the ACC. So I don't like Drake coach. I would have reached out to him. I know some people say he up for Indiana. Or
that's what they're. That's the name that you hear a lot with Indiana.
Yeah, but it's the most. I can't think of all the good mid majors right now. I know George Mason just won the A-10, yeah. And that coach been doing good. You know, that's kind of not saying that guy won't do a great job. I just feel like
One of my buddies in coaching thinks that it's actually a better plan because mid majors have had to deal with roster turnover for longer. People have been picking their rosters apart for much longer than what we've been seeing at the high major level, so they're better equipped for that. I think that's a big part of it. All right, let's take a break. Let's get back to the Tigers. Jason Munns joins us next. We'll talk to him right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM. Yeah.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
ESPN. Jason Munns is the Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on Twitter on X at Munsley. Joins us each and every Monday on the program. Munns, what are we listening to?
Nothing, Jeffrey. This band is called Nothing, and it's a song called "You Wind Me Up," and they're great.
Nothing for no complaints, no notes. Well done, Tigers.
Yeah, well, I was going for the "you wind me up" because there's some bracketologies out there that are winding up some Tiger fans today, boy, let me tell you.
I do think, and I know Patrick Stevens, we had him on the show, and of course he used to work with Mark, but I do think the Tigers could be one of the most interesting teams to see where they're seated because almost every single person that studies bracketology will say the same thing. Their resume of what they've done on the floor is so vastly different than their resume from the predictive metrics. But then there's this real question of how will the predictive metrics get used? Because no one really has an answer because we haven't seen a team like Memphis that has this kind of wide of a gap between those two things.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be telling. I mean, you know, depending on where Memphis gets seated, if nothing else, it's going to say a lot about this year because, you know, the selection and the seeding process does tend to shift and morph and change from year to year. It's not like, you know, because FAU – I think last year FAU had 3 quad 4 losses and only 1 quad 1 loss, and they wound up as an 8 seed. And so people are kind of holding that up and saying, well, if that was an 8 seed last year, then Memphis with 6 quad 1 wins and 0 quad 4 losses should be better than that. Well, it's different because, you know, everybody's resume is different over, you know, like you're comparing apples and oranges. And so, but talking about this year specifically, we're going to find out in less than a week what this particular committee, this particular season values more because, you know, if Memphis gets, you know, like a 6 seed or a 5 seed, well, then we're going to know that they really, really, value the resume over the predictive stuff. And if not, if they're an 8, then, or a 9, then it's going to be pretty obvious that, that it's more about the resume, or more about the results. So, or more about the predictives. I'm sorry. So yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how it all plays out
Well, I think to the other point, if you're comparing it to last year, another big part of last year's was that a lot of teams had quad 3 and 4 losses. This year, like when you go and you look at it with Memphis, like of the teams around them,
right,
the two quad three losses kind of stand out because most everybody else has just got one or none. And then when you look at it with the other big leagues, like the SEC went something like 145-2 against quads 3 and 4. And so there's just fewer teams like that. I think what I'm actually going to look at is, like, if you look at the WAB, wins above bubble, Memphis, yeah, I think, is at 24, which somewhere around a 6 seed, which kind of, it's like, okay. There's even a difference between their WAB rank and their net rank. I'm very curious to see how that plays out because that's a new metric that they're adding this year.
Yeah, and they've talked a lot about, even individual committee members, even the committee chair has made it a point to say that is something that has been added to the mix this season. Like they're making sure that they point that out. And if that is as front of mind as it appears to be, then Memphis should be in decent shape for, better than an 8 or a 9 seed. You mentioned Memphis having 2 quad 3 losses, Jeffrey. They actually have 3.
Three now.
Morning. Yep. Wichita State losing at home to god-awful Tulsa yesterday has dropped Wichita State 15 spots in the net.
Oh, boy.
From one day to the next, and that means that they are now a quad 3 loss for Memphis. So they have 3. Now, I personally don't – my gut tells me that is going to matter way less because it has vacillated, because it has sort of ping-ponged back and forth. To me, that is not going to be, like, one of those things where they're in the selection – where the selection committee's meeting and they're talking about this and they're going, well, yeah, but they got 3 wins. They got 3 quad 3 losses. Memphis does. We gotta knock them down because of that. Something tells me that's not what's going to happen because again, it's, you're talking about a game that only just became a quad 3, you know what I mean? It's gone.
Yeah.
It's kind of bounced back and forth. So, that is, while it's going to be part of the discussion and probably part of the decision-making process, I don't think that it's going to be one of those things where it's like, well, we want to put them at a 7, but you know what? That quad 3 loss in overtime,
yeah, it's too much. Too much for us.
Wichita State, we can't look past that. It's going to be, we got to knock them down to an 8 or a 9. I don't see it happening, but no, there are some, Lunardi created quite a stir over the weekend when he put Memphis in his update to an 8 seed. And there have been a few other bracketologists who have bumped Memphis down. Now, there are still, up until the last couple of hours, there are still people updating their brackets who are keeping Memphis at a 6. Jerry Palm is one of them. And there are others. And there are others who are keeping Memphis at a 7. So, there's a bunch of different bracketologies out there. You just got, who do you trust? That's what it all boils down to. Ultimately, it's going to matter what the selection committee decides, and that is, we won't find that out until next Sunday evening, or until this Sunday evening. And personally, I just don't see, like, let's say Memphis wins the tournament. Let's say they win Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and they win the tournament. That means they're going to be a 29-win double champion with at least 6, well, not at least, they'll have 6 quad 1 wins at that point and at least 12 quad 1 / quad 2 wins. They've already got I think 3rd in the country in true road wins with 11, and then you add 3 more neutral site wins to that sort of away from home win total, and it goes up to, what would it be, 16 wins away, yeah, from off their home floor. I do not see a 29-win double champion with all those other things being less than a 7 seed. So, but we'll see.
How much is your week in Fort Worth going to be covering games versus
trying to talk to people and hear what they're hearing from the NCAA. Because I think that's another thing that gets kind of left out of this. A lot of times bracketology gets shaken up this last week because, well, there's travel involved. And the committee's trying to get travel organized. So people start to have an idea of where they're going and who they're going to be potted up with. How much of your week is going to be digging on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be just like that won't be the only thing that is dividing my attention away from the actual games. But, yeah, I mean, like these conference tournaments, these, you know, anything like this, that's a huge part of the piece of the pie. And this year, though, to your point, it might be more so than ever just because it is so – I mean, like it feels like Memphis is on the bubble, does it not? Like – It very much feels like because there's so many divided. So
I feel like the fan base feels that way, but
yeah,
but no. Like my thing is like I think even they could lose on Friday, and yes, that's probably going to be a bad loss. Either a loss to South Florida or to Wichita State, they're still getting their name called on Saturday on Sunday, and it's not going to be in Dayton. Like you know what I mean?
Correct. No, that's what I'm saying. But it kind of feels like it because there's so many varying opinions. You know, like, are they a six? Are they a seven? Are they an eight? Has sort of replaced the are they in or are they out? And, I mean, you know, so much has been made. You know, Penny's talked so much about it this season about not wanting to be in that 8-9 game, making it seem like that 8-9 game is tantamount to being on the bubble. You know, I think that's sort of gotten. I think that's why people feel the way they do about it. Like if they're an eight or a nine, well then we're just screwed.
And I do think like that actually becomes like a bigger picture question. And like, cause how many years is Memphis going to be able to put together a non-conference schedule like they did and have everybody largely hold up their end of the bargain? Like it's not just, you know what I mean? Like it's not just that Memphis played well. It's that, the other teams kind of held up their end of the bargain. And then it's, you know, I'm not asking Memphis to go 18-0 in conference play. Like, I just don't know how realistic that is. I've seen Houston go and lose to a terrible East Carolina team. Like, as you pointed out when we started the season, it's still a conference. And this idea that you're going to go perfect is insane. Like, I do think that's where it starts to become like a big option or big situation. It's like, well, if this team had this resume and they still get like an 8 or a 9, it's like, okay, is that what we're just establishing? That's the ceiling?
That is a very sort of nerve-wracking thing to think about, is given everything that Memphis has done this season, if it plays out where Memphis doesn't do any better than an 8 seed, then it's going to be kind of a sobering reality. Like, you know, we did all this. We were part of the conversation pretty much ever since Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We were part of the national conversation and never sort of left it. I mean, you know, like, yes, there were some bumps along the way, losing to Temple, losing to Arkansas State. There were bumps along the way. But as we've discussed so many times, it's darn near impossible to not have a bump or two in the road. But yeah, like I said, if this is the best we can do when we've done everything that we have done, I'd hate to think about what those conversations might lead to if that's the way it plays out.
And I kind of want to pick your brain because last week when Penny was on with Jason and John, he said it's, you know, on the commissioner, on the conference to schedule better. And it's like one of those situations where, in theory, I think he's right. But I also wonder, like, how practical is that? Because how many teams in the conference do you think would even have the ability, if they wanted to, could actually schedule as Memphis does?
Very few. But, like, I don't know that anybody is asking the teams in this conference to do that. Like, go schedule Drake.
Yeah.
Go schedule, I don't know, New Mexico. Go schedule St. Mary's or Santa Clara or San Francisco. Like, even Memphis didn't schedule, you know, blue bloods and power teams all the way up and down the thing. But, like, they went out and scheduled Louisiana Tech, who I believe was the preseason Conference USA pick.
And Arkansas State was preseason Sun Belt.
Yeah, and I don't know that Ohio was preseason MAC.
I think they were the defending MAC. I don't know if they were preseason favored.
Yeah, so, but like, you don't have to go out and schedule Auburn and Duke and Kansas. You just don't need to go out and schedule 5 or 6 or 7 sub 300 KenPom teams. And I mean, I asked Tim Pernetti that very question, like, the story that I wrote last week, one of the stories that I wrote last week was just talking to him about, you know, the scheduling issues that the conference has, and how if you take Memphis out of the equation, because Memphis didn't schedule any non-D1s and Memphis did not schedule any sub 300 KenPom teams in non-conference play, the rest of the league, 30% of the total non-conference schedule was sub 300 KenPom teams or non-division one. And not only that, they, like, some of these teams lost to those sub 300 KenPom teams. So like, if you're going to lose, why not try and schedule, why not try to get, like I said, a Drake or a Richmond or a Dayton or a
10. Cobb said, why not call up the A-10 and say, all right, let's do a ACC or AAC, A-10 matchup, you know, maybe the Mountain West, whoever you call it. Like, just there are teams that you could schedule that could keep you from just being this much of a bomb.
Yeah, because again, if you're going to lose, go schedule up and lose. It will hurt you less. It will help the conference more. So yeah, that isn't going to solve it. That's not going to solve the problem. But like, there is an issue. If Memphis wins the conference tournament, this will be a one bid league for the first time in its history. And that's an issue.
And it's an issue that I don't know if it gets better, right? I that's the bigger problem. Is it's not as if this feels like an outlier. You and I were talking about this in the summer, that if Memphis weren't to win the automatic bid, would it be a multi-bid league? And we both came to the conclusion of only if Memphis is the at-large.
Right, and that's exactly what's going to happen. If North Texas wins it, if UAB wins it this week, I mean, Memphis is getting in regardless, and so it'll be a two-bid league, but it's not like if Temple wins it that you're going to get UAB and Memphis and Temple.
Right.
That's not going to happen. But, you know, I don't know the answer to the question. I don't know that anybody does that. Like, is this the way it's going to be from now on? But you have to, if you are part of this conference, you have to try. And part of trying is scheduling better. Part of trying is playing better. And I mean, I don't know. It's weird to me because there are good players in this league. There are really, really good coaches in this league. It just, for whatever reason, at least in the conversation that we're having about this season, did not translate into national relevance outside of Memphis.
No, and I mean, like, John has talked about this, and I kind of agree with him. It's like, the other problem is, because there are good teams that don't have good resumes, it almost makes the losses more catastrophic than they are. Because like you said, if you're just looking at eye test, you don't sit there and go, okay, this is one of the worst leagues in America. I'm not saying that this is the SEC, but as someone that watches a lot of crappy college basketball, like, one thing that's very obvious, like when you watch the West Coast Conference, like, oh yeah, there's a reason why St. Mary's went 17-1. It's because their bad teams are really bad, and there's a clear difference. That's, to me, like, kind of the other issue in this league is, like, I can't tell a massive difference between South Florida and
Wichita.
Yeah.
Or Temple. Or
yeah.
even UAB, the way UAB has played this year. Or Tulane. Yeah. There's not there's Memphis, and then there's, you know, for the most part, there's kind of been everybody else. Even North Texas the other day lost to Temple. UAB lost to Tulane. I mean, and you're talking about, you know, like these other teams. I mean, that Wichita State loss feels like two losses at this point because
of what it did to your resume.
Yeah, because of what it exactly, because of what it did to your resume. So, I mean, you know, you part of it is timing. I get that too. You know, as much as that's beyond me, the fact that it doesn't seem like the Temple loss hurt as much because it was, you know, 6 weeks ago or whatever it was. The Wichita State, you know, them losing at home again, I point this out, them losing at home to Tulsa on the last day of the regular season and dropping 15 spots in the net, it feels like a second loss.
All right, we'll wrap up here. The regular season has concluded. We had the great scene Friday night. Like, when you think about what this season means to Penny Hardaway, what it means to the program, what are the things that come to mind?
Just, I mean, the biggest thing after last season is redemption. You know, like, he and the program were both at a pretty low point after last season. And it didn't exactly turn around until this season began. It wasn't like, okay, we've you know, the season's over, we have flushed it, and now everything's better again. There were some good moments in the off season that made you feel like